Hello, and welcome to this half-hour dose of weekly Jewish spirituality, brought to you by Mishkan's Thursday Morning Minyan. Jews have a tradition of praying three times a day, and at Mishkan, we have a daily virtual minyan at 8 a.m. Central to get your day started. Folks join us from across the country and across the world as we begin each day with words and songs of gratitude, inspiration, healing, and Torah. If you miss us in the morning, join us here every week for the replay of our Thursday Minyan, hosted by me, Rabbi Lizzie Heidemann. During my sabbatical, I know you'll enjoy hearing from the voices of Rabbi Stephen and guest leaders. Without further ado, I invite you to breathe a little deeper, connect a little more with yourself, with God, with Torah, with this community, and with the world around you, wherever you are, whatever your time zone.
Morning, everyone. Nice to see you all here today. We'll be doing a bit of Torah study. We are in Parshat Yitro, which is in the book of Shemot, the book of Exodus. We'll be reading a few verses from chapter 19 today. Before we begin, I'd like us to do the blessing for studying Torah together, which is La'asok B'divrei Torah. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech ha'olam asher kidishanu b'mitzvot ha'vitzivanu la'asok b'divrei Torah. Blessed are you, source of all things, who brings holiness into our lives through our actions, asking us to study words of Torah. So to set the stage a little bit for what we'll be reading today, we have just read the Parshiyot, the Torah sections that are about the Exodus from Egypt. So we've seen the 10 plagues, we've seen the flight of the Israelites from Egypt to the Sea of Reeds. Last week we read about the splitting of the sea and how they crossed through the water on dry land, and then they sang songs of freedom on the other side. It was not an easy start to their freedom as a people. First, they're worried about water. They are in a wilderness after all, then they're worried about food. And so we have the miracle of manna appearing. And then they are beset by an unknown enemy, which we later learn is Amalek, who targets the weakest, those who've fallen behind as they journey forward. And in a harrowing battle, the Israelites have emerged victorious, but there's many lives lost. And so they finally, in this parsha, come to the wilderness of Sinai, where they stand before mountain, and they'll experience revelation. And we get the Ten Commandments in this week's portion. We'll not be reading from the Ten Commandments today, because I'm actually really curious. The question I have is this. We're going to see in just a moment in these verses that the Israelites reach Mount Sinai. God comes down and says some words to them, which don't really contain much in terms of content. And the Israelites respond by saying, "Great, we'll do everything you say." So I guess my question is, for such a stiff-necked and complaining people who are often questioning why in the world God has brought them out of Egypt to wander through the desert, why are they so amenable to whatever God is about to say? Are they agreeing to what is God about to say? Are they reflecting on the past? Like, what are they responding to here? Because it's a very curious kind of arrangement of the text. You'd expect for them to say, "Great, we'll do that," after they actually hear what they're supposed to be doing. So I want you to think upon that. We'll reflect on that in just a moment, but let's read some in Hebrew and in English. We're in chapter 19, verse 1.
Bachodesh hashlishi laseb bnei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim b'yom hazeh ba'u midbar Sinai v'yisu merefadim v'yavo midvar Sinai v'yachnu b'midbar v'yichan sham Yisrael neged ha'har u'moshe ala et el ha'elohim v'yikra elav Adonai min ha'har lemor ko tomar levet Yaakov v'taged livnei Yisrael Atem reitem asher asiti lemitzrayim va'esa etchem al kanfei nisharim va'avi etchem elai ve'ata im shamoa tishma'u bekoli ushmartem et briti va'etem li segula mikol ha'amim ki li kol ha'aretz va'atem tihuli mamlechet kohalim ve'goy kadosh Ele hadavarim asher tadaber el b'nei Yisrael. Vayavo Moshe vayikra liksnei ha'am. Vayase lifnehem et kodarim ha'ele asher tzivahu Adonai. Vayanu koha'am yachtav vayomru. Kol asher diber Adonai na'ase. Vayashev Moshe et divrei ha'am el Adonai.
So, on the third new moon, after the Israelites had gone forth from the land of Egypt, on that very day they entered the wilderness of Sinai. Having journeyed from Rephidim, they entered the wilderness of Sinai and encamped in the wilderness. Israel encamped there in front of the mountain. And Moses went up to God, and God called to him from the mountain, saying, "Thus shall you say to the house of Jacob and declare to the children of Israel, you have seen what I did to the Egyptians, how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to me. Now then, if you will obey me faithfully and keep my covenant, you shall be a treasured possession among all the peoples. Indeed, all the earth is mine, but you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation." These are the words, God says to Moses, that you shall speak to the children of Israel. And so Moses came and summoned the elders of the people and put before them all that God had commanded him. All the people answered as one, saying, "All that God has spoken, we will do." And God brought back the people's words to God. Okay, so I want you to help me figure this out. It seems like God really only says, "I've brought you out of Egypt, and I want you to be a treasured nation to me and a kingdom of priests and a holy nation by obeying my covenant," which is what I'm about to tell you more about in a second. But Moses goes back to the elders and says, "This is what happened." And then all the people, not just the elders, say, "Great, we'll do it." So I'm just curious, like, what what's up here? Like, what are the people answering to? Like, what are they agreeing to? What are the terms of this contract? Because we're about to get a lot more detail in just a second with the Ten Commandments and then the many, many, many mitzvot that come after that. So I'm just curious, what struck people about these passages here?
Well, maybe it's easier to commit to the kingdom of priests and holy nation bit before you actually get into the fine print. So.
Okay.
Maybe they were just a little over-enthusiastic there.
All right. Okay. So a sense of maybe over-enthusiasm. Okay. And the idea of being a kingdom of priests, holy nation, sounds nice. Nicole?
So I've been reading Ki Tisa, the golden calf portion, and I think what's interesting to me is that this relates to that, and that at the top of the mountain, after they've made the calf, God says to Moses, "Your people have been acting up, Moses's people," when just now the people of Israel have pledged to be God's country, essentially, God's nation and kingdom, God's place. And Moses points out to God, you know, very politely, that we can't really, you know, you can't be going take backsies on, we've accepted your nationship, right? So I think that the people are just accepting that they have a reciprocal familial relationship with God.
Mm, beautiful. So it seems like it's not necessarily the content of the covenant that the people are accepting in this moment, which, as Elizabeth is asking in the chat, right? Like, all that God had commanded, like, what, like, beyond just telling the people this particular phrase, like, what else was there? But really, I think the quote you're pointing to is it's maybe the accepting of being in a particular relationship with God, which is going to come with particular terms and demands and needs and also benefits. Almost in some ways, I guess it's kind of like when you DTR, right, define the relationship with somebody you're dating, right? I mean, you say, like, okay, we're going to be partners. We're going to be, you know, boyfriends, girlfriends, whatever it might be. You don't lay out all the terms of what it's going to look like, right, over the next couple decades in that moment. You recognize that there's going to be things, there's going to be needs that arise that will be defined later. I like that. Glenn.
I have two thoughts. One is I mean, what we know from later is the people cycle between moments of being complaining and not having faith, and then moments of having great faith. And if this is one of those moments of great faith, and God says, you're going to be my treasured nation, and they're like, oh yeah, we're all in. This is, you know, this is a moment of high faith. But the other thing that I noticed as you were reading this time is the message from God starts out with, you saw what I did to the Egyptians. So is there some implicit threat of you? I mean, and what God did to the Egyptians is pretty awful. I mean, you know, all their food is destroyed, their water is not drinkable, and then the firstborn are killed, which implies a lot of other people could have been killed. You know, was there some threat of, gee, you don't do this, and the same fate may befall you? Given that choice, yeah, they'll be the treasured nation.
It's you know, there's a great midrash about how the people gather. They say, I think tachat ha'har, like the word is often translated to like at the base of the mountain, but it literally means like under the mountain, which leads to a really interesting Talmudic interpretation that God actually lifted the mountain above the people's heads and said, "You will accept my covenant, or I'm going to drop this mountain on you and essentially squash you." And so, of course, the people say, "Yes, yeah, absolutely, we will." Do this. Like, I mean, why wouldn't we? And the rabbis are really, I guess the other kind of gathered rabbis are really disturbed by this, because they're like, wait, that this is not a great, you know, look for us, that we only accepted this covenant because we were under duress or coercion, or in this case, right, Glenn, as you're pointing out, because we're remembering what God did to people who God did not like, or was not on God's good terms. And then the rabbis say, well, no, it's okay, because actually we see in, I believe it's the story of Esther, right, that we willingly take on the covenant as a people, like we willingly accept these statutes. And in a way, Shavuot, the holiday of Shavuot, the holiday of Revelation, becomes kind of a reaffirmation of accepting this particular relationship in a different place. Right, that we're no longer this people caught in the wilderness. We're no longer, you know, standing under the mountain. We are a free people, and we're able to more freely accept the particulars of this relationship and to be in the relationship itself. Leah?
Thinking about what everybody has said before, and also thinking about the fact that not only is this sort of a familial relationship that the people of Israel and Hashem are entering into, but it's also a beloved relationship, and it's also a working relationship, right? You know, God says that right here in the text, that you are going to do this for me. You're going to be my favorite people. You're going to be a nation of priests. And that has me thinking about how in previous employment situations, I have often gotten a reputation for being insubordinate because I really need to understand the why behind the what. So if you tell me to do something, if I don't understand why you want me to do what you want me to do, candidly, I'm not going to do it. And it's not like, at least for me in the moment, it never feels like it's coming from a disrespectful place. It's coming from a place of needing to know why I'm doing what I'm doing so that I can do it to the best of my ability. And I am just wondering if that is perhaps a motivation we can sort of retroactively superimpose on the people of Israel for all of their supposed stiff-neckedness. Their concerns are always legitimate, and it's always like basic, like rung one on Maslow's hierarchy, food, shelter, safety. That they're kvetching about. So I'm wondering if in this moment the penny drops because the Israelites are understanding for the first time why they are going through all of this mishigas, that there is a bigger picture at play and that they have an important role to fill in the world at large.
It's beautiful. These people, thank you. I think sometimes we misunderstand the Israelites because we look at them, we're like, well, why wouldn't you just like, why do you complain? You know, why are you so difficult? Why do you have this kind of vacillation between great faith and intense doubt? And in many ways, I think those are actually expressions of them trying on their freedom. And, you know, an enslaved people doesn't get to complain, but a free people does get to complain. You know, the ability to choose, the ability to be picky, the ability to have preferences, right? Those are all actually expressions of our own agency and our own and our humanity in some ways. I always think about moments. I worked in social services for a while, helping people who are unhoused and how really like one of the ways that we try to provide dignity in those situations is to give people choice, we actually have like an array of food for you to choose from. We actually have, you know, different winter coats for you to try on. We're not just going to shove one in your hand and say you should be grateful, because one of the ways that we express our humanity, I think, is through agency and the agency of choice and having preference and actually being able to be like a little picky, a little kvetchy. That's a sign of, you know, that is a sign of freedom. I really appreciate that idea. I want to point to also just one very sweet feature at the end here, you know, when the people say, you know, we will do this, we'll enter this particular relationship, it says Moses returns to God and says, you know, and reports back. And some of the rabbis are like, well, why in the world would Moses need to report back to God, who is clearly present and, you know, maybe omniscient? We're not really quite sure. That's, you know, Jewish theology goes back and forth on whether God is omniscient and omnipresent or not. There's definitely theologians who think yes, and there's theologians who think no. But Rashi comes in among other commentators and says, it's actually just good manners. This is Moses going back to God is just teaching us good manners. I always love those sweet moments when the Torah is there just to teach us how to be mensches in the world.
You've been listening to Contact Chai, a production of Mishkan Chicago. If you were inspired or informed by this episode, please leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts so that others can encounter our work. And if you appreciate what Mishkan is doing, I invite you to join as a builder or make a donation on our website at mishkanchicago.org. Shabbat Shalom.